Okay, what I want to do tonight is a little bit similar to last week. I want to tell you a story about the Chafetz Chaim, the great rabbi who is the source of the teachings that we're studying. I want to share a few ideas that will hopefully continue to sensitize us to the evil of gossip and some tools for trying to win the battle of gossip. And then we're going to move on towards the end to this letter that I've been talking about that talks about what do we do when we have information that has to be conveyed constructively? How do we deal with that? Okay, I read a story about Henry Kissinger was driving in his chauffeured Cadillac limousine, and the car died in a rural road in the middle of Pennsylvania. So they're waiting, hopefully, that somebody would come and help. And a guy, Joe, in a tow truck comes, and pickup truck rather, and he comes and he says, "Hi, can I help you? My name is Joe Smith." And Kissinger says, "My name is Dr. Henry Kissinger." And Joe says, "Oh, do you work at the clinic?" No, it's not easy. You're in Butte. I don't know if you're laughing or not. It's not easy when you're a world famous person, you know, and you find out that not everybody knows who you are. It's not that easy. But the Chafetz Chaim, this great rabbi, I want to tell you a story about him. He was this world famous rabbi. He was such a humble person. He didn't dress like a rabbi. He dressed like a regular guy with a cap. You couldn't even tell that he was a rabbi. And he was once traveling, and he stopped off at a Jewish inn for Shabbat. And they didn't know who he was, and they put him at a table. Turns out that he was at a table together with horse traders. Not the most refined people, not the kind of people that the Chafetz Chaim usually hanged out with. And sitting at the table all Shabbat, he sat with these guys, and they were talking about horses, trading horses. And after Shabbat, the innkeeper found out who his guest was. He goes, "This is the world famous rabbi." You know, and he was so very embarrassed. He went up to the rabbi. "I begged him to forgive me. I didn't realize who you were. I never would have put you at that table with talking about horses all day." So his answer was, "I have no problem with talking about horses. When we talk about people, that's when we run into trouble." See, that's a person who's like a Jewish ethicist, like I mentioned last week, who didn't just study ethics, but he lived ethics and he absorbed all our values into his being until it became second nature. Instead of sitting at a table with people that are a lot of fun and is going to be gossip, he'd rather sit with horse traders. He had no problem with that. So that's the kind of person that we're talking about. In case you weren't here last week, basically, to sum it up, you know, they say that a guy once came home from church and his wife said, "What did the minister speak about?" And he said, "He spoke about sin." She said, "Well, what did he say?" So he said, "He was against it." So we were against gossip, Lashon Hara. We spoke about how in certain ways it's the worst thing you could do on this earth according to our tradition. And we gave some, again, insights and tools. So we'll continue along those lines. You know, the Talmud says what sounds like a very strange, perplexing statement. The Talmud implies that gossip is a sin that people do even though there's no pleasure to it. Now, we all, I think, sort of have a sense that doesn't sound right. You know, we know that a juicy piece of gossip could be fun, sharing a juicy piece of gossip. And people struggle with it because it feels good on a certain level, on a base level, it feels good. The rabbis at the Talmud were very, very astute about human nature. They understood us better than we understand ourselves, right? So they're trying to convey something by saying that gossip is something that there's really no pleasure to it. What does it mean? I just want to share with you a idea that I heard from a great person, a metaphor, and that is a picture. There's some kind of party, and they're roasting somebody. And it's actually pretty tough. They're really, really roasting somebody. And then you notice that in the crowd, there's a fellow who writes a gossip column. You know, most people, you know, if we're good, decent people, we try to avoid gossip. And occasionally we all fail and we speak gossip, right? A gossip columnist is a person who spends their whole day trying to find gossip, dig up gossip, and write about it, and they make their money and their livelihood by sharing gossip with people. So you have this roast going on, and you have this gossip columnist, you expect him to jump right in there, and he's a witty guy, and he'll really, really, you know, cut the guy up. And you notice that he doesn't seem to be participating, which is surprising. Okay. Then you notice that not only is he not participating, he looks like he's uncomfortable. He's shifting in his feet, and he's looking down. He doesn't seem to be comfortable. So you wonder, what is it? Why isn't he jumping in? So if you weren't muted, I would ask you, what could possibly be that's stopping this person who eats and breathes gossip from jumping into this roast and participating, right? What seems obvious is that there's a reason why you can't enjoy this gossip, this roast, right? Now you might say maybe they're talking about him, but assume they're not talking about him, what could it be that would make this gossiper uncomfortable about the gossip that's taking place there, the roast that's taking place? The answer is, if they're roasting someone that he loves. You cannot enjoy a roast of someone that you love. No one, no decent person from a normal functional family can enjoy his mother being roasted, right? If you love somebody, you can't enjoy people making fun of them, berating them, and talking gossip about them. So even though he's a person that breathes and makes his livelihood from gossip, they're roasting someone that he loves, he can't enjoy it and he can't participate. He'll just, eventually he'll leave the room, right? So the message the Talmud is giving us is that if we really get in touch with each other, right, and we realize and we work on loving each other, then gossip becomes something that we can't enjoy. It's a tremendous tool, especially at times like this with the social distancing, talking about getting back to normal. This experience we had with all this tragedy and suffering was an opportunity for us to reset how we deal with people. And although we have to be distant socially, but to connect to them on a deep level and to realize that we're all in this together and that we should try to love each other. I remember in the early days, when it first started, at first nobody went out, and then they said, you go out occasionally, get some exercise. So I started going out to jog a little bit, right? And every time you'd meet somebody, you would feel connected. And a total stranger, I would say, stay safe, be well, take care of yourself. You felt connected because you had a common experience. I want to share an experience that I had. That experience was life-changing for me. And since then, I tried to incorporate into my life the message, the lesson I learned there, and try to be the kind of person that I learned one should be from that experience. Does that sound interesting enough to wake you up? Right? So what was the experience? When I first started teaching CTN, so I gave a class, and I was pretty much just out of Rabbinical Academy here in Chicago. I started teaching, and after the class, a fellow came over to me. And he says to me that I'm a heroin addict. And I'm looking for that because religion will solve my problems. I had no idea where to go. I never met a heroin addict in my life, never met any kind of addict in my life, even though I come from New York and I was not sheltered that much, but that was a new experience to me. I had no idea how to respond to this fellow, what to say to him, to encourage him to come, not to discourage him. I had no idea what I should do. So what someone in CTN type of business does when they don't know what to do, you call an expert. So I called an expert, who was Rabbi Michal Twersky from Milwaukee. Many of you may know the Twersky family, Rabbi Michal and Feige Twersky. They're the special, very special people. They devoted their life to outreach and to bring Jewish people closer to the heritage. Amazing, amazing people. So I called Rabbi Michal Twersky. I said, I need help here. I have no idea what to do. This guy, he tells me he's a heroin addict. What am I supposed to do? So basically, his response to me was that you need to sit down with this guy and you need to explain to him that religion is not going to solve his problems. He has issues and problems that have to be addressed, right? After he addresses them, he's welcome to come to the class, but he should not be fooled into thinking that religion somehow is going to take care of his problems. So that was basically his message. But the powerful thing was the way he expressed it. You know what he said to me? I asked him, how do I respond to this heroin addict? He says to me, sit down with him and say to him, my beloved brother. I don't know how to respond to this guy who was an addict. And Rabbi Atorsky is telling me, you got to sit down and say to him, my beloved brother. That's the expression that he used. Now, there's many indications, if you know that Rabbi Atorsky, that he doesn't engage in a lot of gossip. But certainly when you're ready to say my beloved brother to any fellow Jew and even to any human being, not likely to be a person that's going to spend a lot of time gossiping. Right? So the lesson I took from that is that one of the most powerful tools in the battle against the urge to gossip is to work on loving each other. I'm going to say something shocking to you, but I'll say it anyways. Jews are opinionated, right? We have opinions. We don't agree. We disagree, right? And that's fine. And sometimes it gets pretty strong, right? But that does not in any way take away from the ability to love each other. We have a common history of 3,000 years. We stood at Mount Sinai together, right? 3,000 years of Jewish history, of Jewish values, right? We need to love each other. And when we love each other, then not gossiping becomes easier. So that's one take-home tool I hope everyone will take home with them. Work on loving each other, and the gossip becomes less enjoyable. Okay, now now what I want to do is go on to, as I mentioned, this letter and discuss the whole area of, so you have gossip, everyday gossip. So gossip, generally speaking, is a horrible, horrific thing to engage in. Right. But we all intuitively have a sense that there are times when you have to convey negative information about somebody, which is the definition of Lashon Hara, of gossip, is saying something negative about somebody. What do you do when there are constructive reasons to share the negative information? In other words, you may know somebody who's considering a partnership with somebody, somebody's considering dating somebody, someone's considering getting engaged with to somebody or marrying somebody, and you know information that, and withholding that information can really be hurt, right? So we have an intuitive sense, which we can't always follow. We have an intuitive sense that sounds like it's a kosher thing to do, maybe an obligation, right? So the answer is, our tradition tells us that is the case. In other words, gossip, Lashon Hara, is typically destructive. When it's for constructive purposes, then it's not destructive. It's constructive. So Lashon Hara means evil talk. If you're sharing it for a constructive purpose, then it's not evil and it's good. In fact, it becomes an obligation to share it. Right. Now, so left to ourselves, you would say, okay, this person needs this information. Write it down, click send, and send it out. Our tradition says not so fast. The general principle is that you're allowed to, and you have to share such information, but you need to do it carefully. And I want to share with you something that helps me concretize the need to be so careful. Some of you may remember that when Barack Obama was sworn in as president, there was a little oops in the swearing in. Anybody remember that? Basically, the oath is administered by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And the text is mentioned in the Constitution. So you have to be precise. So Chief Justice Roberts said to the president, "Will swear that you will execute faithfully the office of the presidency. You will execute faithfully the office of the presidency." Problem is, that's not the text. It's supposed to be, I will faithfully execute the office of the presidency. So we would say probably big deal, get a life, move on, right? But it's not so simple. You know, the oath is mentioned in the Constitution, has to be precise, right? So there was a mess up here, and there was a whole question, is he president? Because the oath was not administered properly. So after all the back and forth, all the legal expert says that it's most probably not an issue. He is the president, And but out of an abundance of caution, they said they did it over and said the proper words, "I will faithfully execute the office." Out of abundance of caution, they said, "We have to be careful. We'll make sure that it's precise." Why was it so important to have abundance of caution? Because the stakes were very high. This is the most powerful office in the world. Who is president affects the entire world. Right? And when the whole world is at stake, you got to be very, very careful and have abundance of caution. Right? Now, our tradition teaches us, as you may know, that we look at every person as what? Every person is a world of their own. So the message of this story is that we should realize that every time we speak to somebody, we have to have abundance of caution because we're dealing with the world. What is the metaphor that the Torah uses when it talks about creation? God said, "Let there be, let there be." God, the metaphor uses that with speech, God created the world. And we, as part of being godly, have the gift of speech that we can also either build a world or bring down, take a world apart. So every time we talk to someone, we have to realize abundance of caution. And what I would like to do, like you to do, is I like to make it that anytime you hear the Supreme Court did something, you should remember this abundance of caution. You know, there's just a ruling today, so everyone has opinions. Good idea, not a good idea. The court is conservative, not conservative. The Chief Justice is swing vote, not swing vote. All that is interesting and fine. But to me, the tool that we should use is that we should say that, take out from that story, Supreme Court, we should remember the oath of Barack Obama, abundance of caution when you're dealing with the world. Because when we talk to someone, we are dealing with the world. Now, I sent you folks that letter. The letter was written by me, obviously, in response to someone who asked this person about a person that they were considering hiring in a law firm. And you folks read it? Anybody read it?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
So obviously I planted some things in the letter. The question is, so now for a few minutes, let's just discuss this letter. Anyone who would like can unmute yourself and tell me, are we ready to click send on this, or are there things here that need to be addressed and taken out? Anyone have any suggestions of?
A lot of things need to be taken out.
Okay, like?
Pretty much the whole thing.
No, the whole thing.
I'm just kidding. For the first part is he's already belittling another firm that's down the block in actually being not humble at all.
Right. Now, actually, that's 100% correct. In fact, I put that in actually to get you to laugh because it's something that we often do ourselves. You know, you hear something, you say, "Wow, that I know somebody who needs that message." Right. And sometimes it's, we need it ourselves, but that of course, I was just put in there to lighten up a little bit, but you're correct. It's not appropriate. Okay. How about,
himself?
I'm sorry.
He excludes himself. I don't need it, but other people do. So it's as if this doesn't apply to him.
Right, that's absolutely wrong. You know, sometimes when a rabbi speaks and tries to, give insight into how we could correct ourselves, the person who needs the message often is sleeping. And when it doesn't need it, says, "Oh, I really needed that." You know, but 100%. You know, how about when he gets to discuss the issue itself, the person, what he says about the person?
Again, when he says, "Secondly, I've heard that he has not shown the best judgment," that's also hearsay from someone else who gave him gossip.
Okay, who was that?
Janet.
Oh, yes, 100%. That's one of the things.
Hearsay from I heard from someone else.
Right, 100%. That's one thing that the tradition makes clear. That Talmud says that you cannot share hearsay; you can only share what you know. So that was put in deliberately because what he did here was that he said he heard something, and we never have a right to say I heard so and so. Okay.
One of the things that caught my eye, it says he was I taught him in law school And maybe that's okay to say, because it shows that the author of the letter actually knew this Steve person. But when he says, in fact, he was the lower half of his class, that seems to me to be too much information to share.
Okay. Who was that?
Carol.
Oh, hi, Carol. Yes, 100%. That's another condition that Talmud says is that an abundance of caution tells us that you don't have license because it's constructive. We have to count every word and think about what do I need to say to save this person from being hurt or damaged, and I can't say one word more than I have to say.
Right.
So you are correct that when he says so, saying that perhaps that he's not the same caliber of the other associates, that would be appropriate, because if they're looking for that. In fact, he was in the lower half of his class, so something he was not necessary to say, totally unnecessary. In fact, somebody pointed out that every other doctor was in the lower half of their class. You know, it's not like you can't be a good doctor, good lawyer, but it was totally, totally unnecessary. Now once we are taking note of the fact that you can't say more than you need to say, anyone notices that there's a paragraph in this letter that paragraph itself would be sufficient, and there's really no other, may not be any basis for the whole letter other than that paragraph. Anyone have an idea which paragraph I'm referring to? If the goal is to prevent this person from hiring this person who presumably he knows is not what they need or are looking for in this firm, what would be sufficient to achieve that goal?
One that says, I do know Steve Goodman, that paragraph.
Yeah.
Well, would be enough information.
Well, you mean just say, I recommend against hiring him? You know, that, you know, probably the person wants understandably some information, like, you know, what is it? If you don't think it's a good idea, what is it? So he can judge for himself whether that's something that concerns him. What does it do in the last paragraph? Finally, Joe, you told me that chemistry is very important, right? And he says, because very, very often when you have a situation like this, you can sidestep the whole issue involving the quality of the person. And someone says, should I date this guy? And you know this guy has serious character issues. Right? But if very often you can just say, you know, trust me, it's not for you. The chemistry will be horrible. The chemistry will not be there. It's not a good idea for you. You know, very often that will do it. So there's no license to say anything more than that if that will do it. So he says here that you indicated that chemistry is important. So you could have just said, I happen to know him, but chemistry is very important to you. And I know, I could tell you that the chemistry, it won't work. There's nothing negative about that. You know, saying that the chemistry won't be there is not negative. It's just that you're not to work together or to date or to marry. So anytime we can take care of the problem without saying more than we have to, we need to do that. So really, that last paragraph would have been sufficient. So the point is that the fact that something's constructed doesn't give us license. We have to be careful to avoid hearsay. We have to be careful not to say more than we have to say, and we have to think about how we can say this in the shortest way possible, right? Another thing we can't do, which is intuitive, there's some things that are intuitive, and then there are going to be some that which I'm saving for next week, which are not intuitive. We would never think of that on our own. Another thing that's probably intuitive to us is he does something else here. He talks about his sense of humor. What does he say? He has a bizarre sense of humor.
He doesn't show the best judgment with dealing with the situation.
Right. Well,
the sense of humor part doesn't really seem. I mean, he tries to tie it in to it'll turn off clients, but it doesn't really connect to the job of being a lawyer and how good a lawyer he may be. And that's such a subjective thing. Sense of humor.
It could be relevant because the reality is, you know, I know somebody who has a very, very ethical, high ethical standards, and I asked him about trying to find a place for someone who I was close to, and he said, you know, you work as a group, the chemistry is very important, and he knows this fellow, the chemistry won't be there, right? So it's consideration. But the second thing that you said is absolutely correct, and that's important. It's subjective.
The sense of humor part I thought was subjective.
Very subjective, right? Like, you know, my wife laughs at my jokes. You guys aren't laughing at my jokes, you know. it's subjective, right? So you can, you know, you say somebody, he's too sensitive. He or she's too sensitive. That's subjective. You know, some people, sensitivity is something that they admire, and you think it's excessive. And like they say, you person drives, they think everyone driving faster than them is reckless. You know, and because we're subjective, so it's very important to avoid subjectivity, right?
And it is the way in which we say it also, important, because if you come across very strongly or harshly about a characteristic that might not be necessarily that harsh, you could skew the listener or the reader.
Right, 100%. There is such a thing as a sense of humor that could, you know, that can not work well with the group or with the setting, but it's not you to judge. You know, if a person said, you know, it's very important to me, you know, that this person not be very sensitive, because it's hard to work with everybody. But, you know, then there's leeway, but just out of the blue to say that person is extremely, excessively sensitive, we have no right to do that. Another thing that we can't do is embellish. We have to be careful not to embellish. You know, we have to be careful to stick to the facts and not embellish. You know, everyone is shaking, a lot of people are shaking their heads because, again, it's intuitive, but left to ourselves, you know, it's hard to be honest with ourselves sometimes. We think that we're exact, and then we're really embellishing. You know, we know that people are capable of rationalizing. You know, I heard something a few years ago, Reverend Tzipora Heller. Some of you may have heard of her. Very brilliant woman, very funny woman. And she was talking about the fact that we're able to rationalize sometimes. And she said, picture somebody who's trying to grow Jewishly, and they want to try to keep kosher to an extent. So they go to a store and they see this delicious looking frozen pizza. It looks like such delicious, real pizza. It looks so mouthwatering. And they say, well, this is something I really have to have. I hope it has certification, kosher certification. So then she looks in the box and it says, under the supervision of the rabbinate of Saudi Arabia. And she says, oh, that sounds good. That sounds good. Extreme, but, you know, we are capable of rationalizing. That's why we had that term, rationalizing. So our tradition says that before we extend, we have to make sure the word hearsay can be subjective, we can't embellish. We have to make sure that we can't avoid saving the person from hurt without giving this information. Next week, I will share two other things, right? We're, again, left to ourselves, at this point, we would say, if you take out all these things, then probably click send. And our tradition says not so fast. We have to ask ourselves a few different questions before we get to that point. Okay, so folks, the two take-home things I hope that we can take home is, one, the story with Rabbi Chorsky and how working on loving each other is a way to conquer the urge to speak gossip, to speak Lashon Hara. And also, next time you hear the Supreme Court and you hear the Chief Justice, it should click in your mind, abundance of caution. And when we speak to another person, we're speaking to another, to a whole world, and we should have abundance of caution.